Coming up this week, Midland Center for the Arts is presenting two programs in conjunction with a choral piece that will be given at the Midland Center, the auditorium, this Saturday the 9th at 7:30, and it is Joel Thompson's Portraits of the Unsung. To talk about this and the special advance program, which involves a film and a panel discussion, we welcome in Katie Miller, Manager of Community Engagement at Midland Center for the Arts, Matt Travis, Director of Choral and Orchestral Programs at Midland Center. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Hello, hello.
Before we get to the piece itself, or maybe we should start there, or how the intersection came, was there a film before there was the piece? Was the film done in conjunction with the piece? How did this tie-in come to be?
Sure. Well, Matt actually is the generator of this whole program, Portraits of the Unsung, so I'll let him talk a little bit about that. But the film that we'll be showing tonight, Wednesday, November 6th at 7 p.m. at the center, is about Grace Lee Boggs, who is a Detroit resident for over 50 years and a civil rights activist and philosopher. So we'll be screening the film American Revolutionary, The Evolution of Grace Lee Boggs, and then holding a panel discussion about women and various civil rights movements of the 20th and 21st century and kind of the modern impact of that and implications for women and civil rights today. But that directly ties into the choral program that Matt has commissioned and will be presenting on Saturday, November 9th at the center.
When and how did you come in contact with the film then itself? And what can you tell us about the production of that and the filmmaker and how it is a direct tie and links as well as it does to this choral program that's coming up?
Absolutely. Well, Grace Lee Boggs is one of the women who will be featured and celebrated in the choral program. So bouncing off of that, I wanted to dive into her life a little bit more because she is such an unknown figure, but so important in especially Detroit civil rights history. So went looking for a film, and this film was actually made by another woman, a documentary filmmaker named Grace Lee. So she was doing a project called the Grace Lee Project, looking at other women around the country named Grace Lee, which was her namesake. And she found Grace Lee Boggs and established a 12-year relationship with Grace Lee Boggs in Detroit. She visited her over the course of 12 years and made this film, which was released just before her death in 2015. So Grace actually lived to be 100 years old and lived in the same house in Detroit for 50 years. She attended college starting at 16 years old in 1931 and earned a PhD in philosophy, and then had this long and active career as a philosopher and civil rights activist in Detroit.
How common is it that you are now looking, Katie, at ways to join, whether we're talking about something that might tie in potentially with any of the branches of Midland Center, whether we're talking about something involving science or the arts or the gardens? A collaboration like this is a great way to involve more people, attract more people, and broaden the scope. How much of a challenge is that to link these things up, and how common is that now that you all are looking for different ways to help each other out?
It's absolutely becoming a lot more possible and a lot more common at the center. So we have so many different areas of programming that we do, from history programming to visual arts, obviously to music and, you know, vocal and orchestral music, to performing arts, film. And because we are all in one building and working together as one larger team, these sorts of opportunities to cross program and find connections between different areas of arts and humanities is a lot more possible, and we're doing a lot more of that work. But I really took the inspiration for this program with the film and then the panel discussion, which will feature four panelists and a moderator with Women in Civil Rights. That's part of actually a larger programming series called the Perspective Series at the Center for the Arts, really came out of Matt's kind of ingenuity in working with Joel Thompson, the composer, and finding the stories of these three women, which he'll talk about here in a moment. And we wanted to give more context to that and give people an opportunity to dig deeper into the stories of one of these women. So it becomes easier and easier when you have to do these sorts of things, when you have creative coworkers and collaborators like Matt.
I'll be asking Katie to write my letters of recommendation. appreciative of
everyone needs words. Everyone needs a good press agent. That's always good.
Matt and I work together quite a bit, and we get along very well, as you can tell.
The film and panel discussion is coming up this evening at Midland Center for the Arts in Midland, and midlandcenter.org for all of the information. Film and panel discussion. The film then and doors open what time and for the film?
Doors will open at 6:30 p.m. for seating, and the film starts at 7 p.m.
Which takes us then to the performance piece coming up this Saturday the 9th at 7:30 at Midland Center for the Arts, a 6:45, a pre-concert talk, and centered around a commissioned piece from composer Joel Thompson, Portraits of the Unsung. How much time in the process then and the inspiration and the bringing together? What do we know about Joel Thompson and how he came to put this particular piece together with the focus on the individuals that he has?
This process began, well, if we want to get really technical, you know, I was first exposed to the music of Joel Thompson just before I came to the Center for the Arts, so about almost exactly 3 years ago. Joel was commissioned by the Sphinx Organization out of Detroit, an organization committed to changing the racial demographic of classical music, specifically advocating for Black and Latino, Latinx performers and composers. And so he wrote a piece for the Sphinx Organization and the University of Michigan Men's Glee Club called The Seven Words of the Unarmed Man. And what it was is it took texts, you know, the last few words said by Eric Garner and Michael Bourne and Trayvon Martin and, you know, seven men who died at the hands of, you know, gun violence through police or through other kind of vigilantes in the case of Trayvon Martin. And it was really an incredibly profound work. I mean, I've been fortunate in that I've prepared Brahms Requiem and Elijah and Mozart Requiem and all these incredible kind of monuments of classical music. But I don't know that I was ever moved in the way that this particular piece moved me. Just the craftsmanship in the musical line, the setting of text is absolutely magnificent. This was a composer that deeply inspired me, particularly his words surrounding the piece, you know. Obviously, something like that might be a little bit controversial, but Joel has always said, you know, this is not a work, an anti-police work. This is a work, a way for me to kind of deal with my own grief and a way for me to kind of handle the healing and accept the fact that if these crimes, you know, if these incidents occurred in a different zip code, it could have been me and there could have been another composer writing my Requiem. And so I reached out to Joel, you know, saying, I deeply admire you. You're an incredible composer. I'm interested in telling the stories of people maybe that history either didn't get quite right or maybe that history didn't tell their stories. And I'd like to use your voice as a way to tell these stories and facilitate important conversations in our community, important conversations in our ensemble. And so we started with a list. I kind of gave him a list of 20 to 30 people that I kind of thought would be interesting. And of course, zero of those people ended up kind of making the final cut. And we thought we were going to do something about Ava Jesse, you know, Harlem Renaissance, original music director of Porgy and Bess, kind of went a different direction. And so we ended up with music written about three civil rights changemakers: Rosa Parks, Grace Lee Boggs, as Katie mentioned, and Viola Liuzzo. And he teamed with Chicago-based poet to write these original works. And the music is an unbelievable mirror image and enhancement of these very picturesque texts that were written by Danielle Taylor from Chicago.
Had he said, had Joel Thompson said to you, Matt Travis, that he was thinking or was exploring in any way the idea of doing a piece about these individuals before you came to him with the idea?
No. No, Joel actually was working on a, he was very bashful about talking about this commission project. He was working on his first commission, and I'm not sure that I'm allowed to talk about it, but he shortly after let me know that it was a commission with probably one of the three foremost opera companies in America. But he was kind of very coy about releasing that. So that's sort of what he was working on at the time. And I said, what do you think about this idea? If we're having a candid conversation in classical music, repertory is dominated by the programming of dead white Europeans, largely. And, you know, programming new music is tough, and programming music written by composers of color is a challenge. And I said, you know, let's go after both of these at once. And not just because Joel is a composer of color, because he's one of the finest composers out there. And so it gives us a chance to collaborate with someone that we otherwise would not have and learn about, you know, these incredible women that we didn't necessarily know about.
Interesting crossroads that bring this part of the program together. And to hear that after you described, Katie, the interesting circumstance by which Grace Lee was simply wanting to find people with her same name and came upon and develops a rich relationship with one of the subjects of the piece, Grace Lee Boggs. I wonder how much more do we know about Grace Lee's work in terms of the uniqueness of the story that became that of Grace Lee Boggs. Do we know anything more about those others that she encountered? Did they become the subjects of other individual films, or?
I don't believe so, but she did release the film, The Grace Lee Project. So you can look that up through Grace Lee's website and her other social media platforms. But this, from talking a little bit with the agency that promotes the film and doing some reading, this became a very personal relationship for Grace Lee. Like I said, it lasted 12 years, and she was incredibly invested in telling Grace Lee Boggs' story because it is a unique one, and it is one that not a lot of people know or recognize. And Grace Lee Boggs was an Asian-American woman who broke a lot of barriers. She was in an interracial marriage. She was married to James Boggs for 40 years, who was a Black auto worker and activist. And the two of them really founded their relationship and their marriage on their activism. And the two of them ended up founding a program in Detroit called Detroit Summer in the 1980s, kind of in reaction to the mayor's plan at that time to bring casinos in as an economic driver for the city of Detroit. They were protesting that. They didn't agree with that plan, but the mayor came back to them and said, well, what's your idea? What's your suggestion? They didn't have one. But they knew that there was work to be done, even if there weren't jobs. So they actually founded this program, which was for teenagers, to get teenagers involved in the community, planting community gardens, fixing up broken, rundown homes, painting murals, and doing community service as a way to involve teenagers more in the community during that period of time. And the program still goes on today. So I think Grace Lee really felt a pull to tell this story in more detail. And thankfully, well, I would say probably too late, but the New York Times, NPR, Michigan Radio ran some wonderful remembrances of Grace mm-hmm. when she died in 2015. But maybe a little too little too late in terms of telling her story and recognizing her contributions to the civil rights movement, especially the Black Power movement, Asian American civil rights, women's rights, throughout the course of her 100-year life.
Hence a very fitting tie to the title Portraits of the Unsung, Joel Thompson's commissioned work that will be performed at Center for the Arts. In the commissioning, in the run-up to this then, in terms of shaping this for the numbers of voices, bringing the voices together and the resources then, Matt, that you have to draw on from the different choral groups. Was there any talk, or was it simply Joel went to work, presents this and says it calls for these voices in this configuration, go get them?
Yeah, so a couple of things. Yeah, so I actually sent him recordings of a couple recent concerts that he could kind of listen to. I kind of gave him some recommendations as far as divisi, so number of kind of parts and where he could kind of put those. I said, go easy on the splits and the men. And, you know, we have a lot of altos who are very fine, so maybe you could do some extra divisions in the alto section. And I think, you know, there are so many interesting components about this program and about this piece, but Joel has actually chosen all of the repertoire on the concert. So they'll be the commissions. But I said, why don't you choose other repertoire that kind of complements the pieces that you've written? And there are some very specific ties between both the commission work and the others. So, for example, in the Viola Liuzzo section, the piece ends with the Battle Hymn of the Republic, Glory, Glory, Hallelujah, right? And the commissioned work has a portion of that, bum, ba-dum, 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 bum. But he said it in the octatonic collection, which is an alternation of whole and half steps. So it sounds like ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum. And it's really begins kind of quite disjunct at first. But then there's this incredible moment where she is kind of, it talks about sort of the transmigration between being in the living and then being in the afterlife. And this beautiful moment where the text says, and she continues passing on. And at this moment, it shifts from this kind of disjunct octatonic collection to very diatonic, major, sonorous chords. And it's incredibly lovely. I mean, the care and detail in this piece, quite honestly, is unrivaled in almost anything I've prepared.
We know so much about Rosa Parks. We know far less about Grace Lee Boggs and about Viola. And certainly, Katie, I think it's an excellent choice to come across this particular film from filmmaker Grace Lee that'll be presented tonight at Center for the Arts. Did you find, or is it remaining even more the unsung and the untold story about Viola's life in terms of potentially having something that, like the film about Grace Lee, that could supplement what Matt is going to be presenting on Saturday?
Yeah, there are several films out there that tell Viola's story and that you can certainly find out there. But Grace was just a very compelling figure to us. And I thought set up a discussion about women and civil rights in a modern context very, very well, because her life did span so long in so many different movements. But Viola is such an inspiring figure as well. And I've had such the personal honor of learning the stories of these women and more about the legacy of Rosa Parks as well. But Viola, in case you don't know, was a Detroit housewife and mother of five in the 50s and 60s who felt the call of the Selma marches in 1965, packed a bag, drove herself to Selma, participated in organizing and marching during the Selma marches, and then was murdered by the Ku Klux Klan when she was shuttling protesters from Montgomery to Selma. And she remains the only white woman to be killed during the civil rights movement. And her legacy of hearing that call and taking action, leaving behind the people she loved to go help people she didn't know personally, but felt the call to assist and to be a part of that movement, I think is really, really powerful and a powerful message for today. And telling that story, I've lived in Michigan for 22 years and I had never heard her name. How many other people don't know her story and her legacy as well? And in researching this and learning more about these amazing women, we learned that there's a park in Detroit that honors her that was really in disrepair until very recently. And there's a newly commissioned statue that was just unveiled in July, actually, in that park that shows actually the same image that inspired Joel to write the piece about her, her standing fearlessly in the face of danger and hatred, walking forward actually barefoot, because she did like to go barefoot quite often at home where she was comfortable with her family. And it's such a powerful image that inspired both this park and the statue and the piece that Joel wrote. So it's, I think, this idea of recognizing women and so many other people that have done amazing things in history, but their stories have gone largely untold, is really, really powerful and a valuable way to inspire us to be creative and create new works of art.
To jump back into the musical side of things, it's worth noting that Joel took the idea of portraits very deliberately and very literally. And so he chose three specific pictures and he sent them to poet Danielle Yelly Taylor from Chicago to write them. And so in the case of Viola, it's a portrait of her marching. And she's not wearing her shoes. She's carrying her shoes. And that, idea that I mentioned, that musical, like, you know, it runs kind of pervasive throughout much of the piece. And the text begins, "This is not how I had imagined going home running." And it's the idea, the music is running, music is running. And then the text ends with, "And I march on, and I march on, and I march on." Well, this idea is still kind of constantly going. And it's really very, the text itself, I mean, there's incredible play on words, because we're talking about her kind of transition into the afterlife, using kind of the, is it a homonym? What would it be? Katie, fix me here. But the word souls, at times it's S-O-U-L-S. And then at times it's S-O-L-E-S. And it's the text for all of these will be given to each of our patrons and will also be read, because I think that that's such an important part of what we're doing.
So that story of Viola that now is perhaps coming to light for people and elaborating as we have on the story of Grace Lee Boggs, but we would be remiss if we did not note Rosa Parks. Although we know so much about her story and the incredibly powerful figure that she was throughout the civil rights movement and the remainder of her life, the inspiration and the tie-in to Thompson's work and how that came to be and how Rosa Parks went from portrait and image and inspiration to the music itself. How did that happen?
Sure. So the picture that Joel chose to use to represent Rosa Parks, and again, we'll see this in the context of the piece, is actually her mugshot from the arrest associated with the Montgomery bus boycott. And so that depicts her prisoner identification number, which is 7053. And without getting into an extensive set theory detail conversation, we all know how music is kind of traditionally notated on a musical staff. Well, there's another way where you can use numbers affiliated with certain pitches. So 7 is the pitch G, 0 is the pitch C, 5 is the pitch F, and 3 is the pitch E flat. And those of you music nerds like myself would notice that that fits pretty well in C minor. And so he uses that idea, bum, 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 appearing in that order over the course of the entire piece. And the text opens with this idea. We all know kind of the story of Rosa Parks loosely, but oftentimes in history books, she's portrayed as this woman that is tired, that just kind of had enough and didn't want to get up that day. But this was a part of a very deliberate, very intentional choice. And so the first words of the text set on that pitch kind of morphed into to two voices at once is, "I decided." And it's, I decided. I'm sure that makes for great radio, me singing like that. But that bit of text is repeated, you know, many, many, many times over the course of almost two pages before we have any other material. And it's just kind of pounding that idea home. I decided. I didn't, you know, haphazardly do this. I made a choice to make this sacrifice.
The film about the life of Grace Lee Boggs, from filmmaker Grace Lee and originating from her Grace Lee project, is going to be shown tonight. Doors open at 6:30. The film and then panel discussion to follow begins at 7 at the Midland Center for the Arts. And this Saturday at 7:30, with doors opening at 6:30 and 6:45 for the pre-concert talk, the performing choral ensembles of the Midland Center for the Arts under the direction of Matt Travis, with Joel Thompson's Portraits of the Unsung. Bringing together a film, poetry, the pictures, the music, and all culminating in several days centered around these very powerful figures, all to be represented in the arts at Midland Center for the Arts, midlandcenter.org. Matt Travis, Katie Miller from Center for the Arts, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.